Welcome
to the Local Economic Development Podcast,
hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Stahl.
For other programs in this series,
please have a look at www.ledcast.net. So, Sean, what are we going to talk about today?
Jörg, I thought we should talk about that typology that you came up with last year that explains the different kinds of territorial economies.
Right, yes. Maybe I should just quickly explain why I came up with that. The main reason was that I found it doesn't really make that much sense to come up with all sorts of LED manuals or methodologies without considering the fact that there is, well, obviously very different types of locations. And it's not as simple as saying, well, there's prosperous and not so prosperous places. What I have observed is that it actually makes sense to distinguish places according to two different criteria or along two different axes in the metrics. The one criterion would be to say, well, to what extent is the place growing or thriving, doing very well economically, or stagnating or even declining? And the other criterion would be to ask, well, how about the local structures that you have, the kind of supporting institutions in education, in finance, in technology, in whatever, and also the infrastructure that you have in a given place. And when you combine these two elements, these two criteria, you end up with a matrix that has four quadrants, where you have thriving territories, where you have very strong structures, excellent infrastructure, all sorts of specialized institutions and organizations, and where you have sustained growth. Then you have emerging territories, where you also have sustained growth, but the structures are only just emerging. They are work in progress at an incipient level. The government is still working on the infrastructure, which is as yet not that good. There's that many institutions, and local actors are getting involved in LED actually to create those institutions. Then there's declining territories, which are those places where you have very strong structures, all sorts of infrastructure, all sorts of organizations, except that the local economy is not doing well. It's actually going downhill. And ultimately, there's marginalized territories where you have a stagnating or declining local economy and relatively weak structures. I think what I'm going to do is to put this figure or maybe even this presentation onto our website so that people can have a look at that if they want to.
Okay, so you have just stepped us through the four quadrants that's there, starting with the thriving and then ending up with the marginalized. So those, the infrastructure that you're mentioning, the structures, that is not just referring to physical infrastructure.
Very much not. What you find in strong local economies is that they have all sorts of organizations and institutions in areas like education, in areas like finance, in areas like technological research. But also, for instance, when you think about mining places, they tend to have very strong health structures because so many people got sick there. So that is what I refer to.
Okay. So, Jörg, why don't we look at a couple of examples that we could allocate to these different blocks?
Right. Yeah. Well, one of my favorite places in terms of what I mentioned when I need to explain a thriving local economy, and also a place that has a very strong local effort to upgrade, is a place called Castellón in Spain. It's actually the leading cluster in ceramic tile production in the world right now. That place is alone responsible for 90% of Spanish production, and they have overtaken the formerly leading Italian producers a couple of years ago. And that is a place that has been doing very well for quite some time now. They started to grow very quickly in the 1970s. They made a couple of major technological breakthroughs in the 1980s. They started to work on their structures, on higher education, on applied research. In the 1980s, they created a very strong technological research institute in the 1990s. They have an extremely strong business chamber, business organization that focuses primarily on ceramic tiles. And in recent years, they have been looking at things like how to improve marketing, how to work on design, how to get more distinguished and more unique design, how to train people on design to further that competitive advantage.
Okay, now that sounds like a very well-organized place. I can immediately think of two smaller examples in South Africa, the one being Pilgrim's Rest, which is a town that is a tourism town. It's like a museum town.
Yeah.
and they have some strong structures counting in their favor there, and they have growth. And there's actually a couple of other smaller places, smaller towns, that can also be classified as thriving territories.
Yeah, I've seen it. I've come across some of those places, exactly.
Okay, let's look at these emerging territories then. So these are places where there's sustained growth, but weak structures.
Right, yeah. Well, a couple of years ago, I came across a rather incipient industrial cluster in the most improbable place, which was a small town in the interior of the state of Ceará in northeastern Brazil, where a lady had started a very successful business in producing lingerie, ladies' underwear, around 1990, 1991. And then other local business people had copied that. Then she split from her husband, who took half the workers and half the sewing machines, and started his own business. And 10 years later, there was a couple of hundred people working there in that location, and they were making hundreds of thousands of dollars of turnover every month. However, at that stage, when I visited that place for the first time, there was hardly anything there in terms of structures. It was manufacturing in the houses. There was no industrial estate or anything like that. There was no formalized training going on. There was not really much in terms of support structures that was available in that place. And it only happened after some time later that, for instance, the mayor of that town understood that he had a very huge potential there, and started to pull in a vocational training organization and started to create an industrial estate so that the companies could operate in proper venues in an industrial estate.
Okay, so that is an example where small firms and entrepreneurs really took the lead to build this kind of growth. Maybe I can give an example of, well, I can actually think of many places where a large investor or new industry or maybe a mining company comes into a place that was previously a very small or weak place. And along with the middle managers, they bring wives and children, and they need to go to schools, and they need to buy food. So very quickly, you could have a place where you can see a lot of growth. You can actually see new buildings going up everywhere, new houses. But you can also see that the structures, the physical structures, are taking strain. So there's maybe water problems and electricity problems. But you would also find that the schools are not yet working properly. You know, you can just actually see that this whole place is trying to catch up with the growth of that's caused by one large or a couple of large firms.
Yeah. I've also seen a couple of places like that one. And, I mean, ironically, that also takes us immediately to the declining territory.
Yes, that's almost the exact opposite, where maybe to link it to my example of the mining sector or where a big investor comes in many places, and there's worldwide examples of this, where the mining industry goes into decline or they move from one mineral to the next, you suddenly find that this whole area is in decline because the middle managers are suddenly being moved to other places, and they again take their wives and their children and their spouses and their grandparents with them.
Yeah, right. Ironically and interestingly, very much the same is actually true with respect to my example, because there's so many towns that used to be very strong based on textile and garments industry, and where all that is gone now, and where the cities had to go through very, very painful adjustment processes. I mean, starting with places in England in 20th century, and I mean, you have many of those places in South Africa these days.
Yes, and maybe just the point here is that, again, this is also relevant to small places. In South Africa, we've had small towns that were created along the old steam locomotive railroads. And with the advent of of new technology, with electric and diesel steam engines or locomotives, these places were suddenly in decline. So they had good infrastructure, they had good schools, the whole economic lifeblood of this place is gone.
Didn't occur to me before, but we both have seen one of those places in South Africa's Eastern Cape province. Just around the corner, you have the ultimate example of the marginalized territory.
Yes, and these are the places that were maybe never very strong in terms of infrastructure, and that is declining because of the migration of young and strong workers to cities or to the urban areas. People go and study in a nearby city, and they never come back. So the area is in is in stagnation or decline, and the infrastructure is weak. And one must just be careful there, because sometimes places could be in economic stagnation, even though it's on the surface, you can see traders still going around with their business.
Yeah.
So this stagnation doesn't mean that there's nothing going on.
There is actually quite a bit of money coming in, but a lot of that is remittances and government transfers.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, so a lot of rural areas in South Africa would be in that last quadrant, in the marginalized territory.
And, of course, you find those places pretty much everywhere. I mean, we have those places in Germany. When you look at some of the parts of eastern Germany that, after unification, went through deindustrialization and are still haven't really turned around and are still very marginal, and nobody quite knows what to do about those places.
And there's also places that simply never had a very strong structure or required a strong structure. If I think of parts of South Africa where there was certain kinds of agriculture, where farmers had very large farms and they managed to overcome the bad roads and the no electricity. And now that agriculture there is in decline, it's very difficult to turn those areas around because there's hardly any infrastructure, and now there's decline. Yeah.
Maybe let's shift the focus just a little bit. What I keep observing is that, well, we in our practice, you in your practice, but also many other people who are involved in LED, are really not that much concerned about thriving territories and emerging territories. Because, well, in international development cooperation, donors are not so concerned with those places because they are doing well anyway. And also often national governments aren't that concerned about those places, whereas everybody is very worried about the declining territories and the marginalized territories. Maybe let's just quickly reflect on some of the things that you typically do in these two types of territories. What can you do to turn around declining territories, and what can you do to stimulate local economies in marginalized territories? Any experiences?
Well, in the declining territories, you have to almost go on a search to try and find opportunities that you can move towards, that you can go towards.
Okay.
And this is not easy.
Right.
It is something that requires a lot of collective action. It requires a lot of reflection. And in those kind of scenarios, you often use scenario planning or scenario development methods. But I think what has not been discussed much in the LED practice is that in those kind of places, you need some very credible interventions, and you probably also need some very good change management skills.
Right, yeah. So one of the examples that come to my mind when it comes to things you can actually do in declining territories is look at the structures that you have and that have come out of the old industrial or whatever, mining, natural resource, agriculture, development model, and see whether they are still something that can give you new growth into the future. For instance, in the region where I'm living, which is a declining region, the Ruhr, one of the very strong sectors these days is the health industry. Now, you just talked about change and the necessity to address change in an explicit way. And actually, it's one of the things that I observed in our region, that many economic development practitioners just did not have this sector on their radar screen until quite recently. A few years ago, we had a meeting with people in a development agency who showed us their employment data, and everything was going down except the one sector, which was all sorts of services. And when we had a closer look at that, we saw that it was first and foremost the health sector. And we asked, "Hey, well, what about that?" And they said, "Ah, well, we don't know. We haven't really looked at that." So the mindset of the people in that place was still very, very much an industrial development mindset, a heavy industry mindset. And they didn't really look that much at those new sectors that were coming up.
Yes, that is a fantastic example, because it also looks at some existing competencies that you then try to leverage instead of trying to start something completely new.
Yeah, right.
I think the other importance of change management there, and I've recently heard a colleague refer to the word change facilitation, is that you are going to have to change the minds and the thinking, or influence the thinking of a lot of people to get new momentums and new activities going in new directions.
Right.
Because a lot of people just hope and pray that the old industry would just come back.
Yeah, that's also true.
And local governments spend a lot of their time trying to get these organizations to come back. But if you run out of gold or coal or timber or whatever, then that is pretty much the end.
That's right, yeah. Precisely. Okay, maybe let's talk about the other example of places that people like us so often are getting involved in, which is marginalized territories. What can you do in a place like that?
Well, I very much liked your advice on the previous one to start with what is there. What you almost always find in these marginalized areas is somebody that is making money.
Yes.
They are there, and they are very interesting people, and they usually have an interesting story to tell. But the question is, how can you again use what is there and try to take it up just one level?
Right. Yeah, we'll never forget this one guy who was sitting in exactly a place like that one, in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by a very, very undeveloped region, who was running a very successful canning operation. And we asked the guy, well, so where do you get your inputs? And he said, oh, we have to drive 150 kilometers to get that. And we asked, well, what about those poor communities around here? And he said, well, if they could deliver, if they could provide, I would be more than happy to take their stuff. Nobody's telling them how to do it. Nobody's instructing them. Nobody's teaching them how to do consistent quality production of fresh vegetables. So, sorry, I can't do that. And so that is why I can't give a stimulus to my local economy.
Well, I think what you've just said now is sometimes reinforced by the fact that if you look at data for marginalized areas, a canning factory won't really stand out.
That's also true, yeah.
You know, I'm working with an area now that is a marginalized area, and apparently it is the fruit basket of the province. But nobody actually really bothered to try and verify those numbers. And we're investigating this now, and we found that there's a handful of commercial farmers that are really leading the industry.
Okay.
But somehow it didn't show up in the data for some other reason, and nobody really talked about these people because they had their high-fenced estates and they were just busy doing their own thing.
Interesting. Right.
So that is maybe another example that there's something going on, and it's like you say, they need local inputs, and they are very happy to build local supply chains and local partnerships with local producers.
Right. So what we say is, even in a place like that, that is not doing well, that has weak structures, that is not growing, that has not these obvious potentials, there's still probably some potential somewhere, and you just have to discover it and then build on that.
Yes, and I think maybe a last comment on this left-hand side of your matrix is that new technologies and new industries and new processes and new business models are the kind of innovations that you need on the left-hand side. It is very obvious that business as usual in a marginalized area is going to suffer because of all the other constraints that you face.
Mm.
And those are the kind of places where you have to specifically look at new innovations in terms of how can you run a business or how can you do something.
Right, yes. If you're going in the wrong direction, going faster doesn't help.
Yes, and what about that one of Einstein where he's saying, you know, the definition of insanity is if you do the same thing but you expect a different result.
Right, precisely. Okay, maybe let's wrap up this program by having just a quick look at the right-hand side, which is something where many donor organizations, where many development organizations don't see or much necessity to actually get involved and to throw money at that. Why would you argue that they still should have a look at that?
Well, yes, Jörg. I think that the times are also changing in that in Africa, but I know that the same is true for Asia, where countries are losing industries or where countries are becoming uncompetitive in certain sectors, they are losing jobs in those thriving areas sometimes much faster than you can create new jobs. So we have seen recently that there is a little bit of a willingness to address these areas. At the same time, I must say that in just about every territory that I can think of, you usually have nodes that can be described as thriving.
Right.
And the question is then, how do you link those to the weaker areas? And,
right.
And how can you use those growth nodes to establish core of growth?
Quite right. Okay. Maybe let's leave it at that for today. Thanks very much for listening. And remember, earlier shows are available at www.ledcast.com. .net, and we'll also make some documentation, some background info on today's topic available at the website. So, thanks, Sean, for your contributions.
Thank you, Jörg, and a safe trip back to Germany.
All right. Thank you very much.